You're listening to the Tupton Children Podcast.
Let's start with our motivation. And so let's really train our mind to see how we and others are similar. In our education system, we're usually taught how to analyze and look at how things are different. It's a great emphasis put on discriminating one thing from another. But here, in trying to develop an open heart, we want to see how we and others are similar. Because of course, we know there's all the ways that we're different, but actually those differences are quite inconsequential. When you think that we all want to be happy and none of us want to suffer, and that there's no difference between us in that regard. We may have different things that make us happy, we may have different things that we suffer from, but the wish for happiness and freedom from suffering is the same. If we can tune into that, we know something very deep and something very precious about other living beings. That is a really great equalizer that will enable us to connect with anybody else, everybody else, no matter who they are. So it's good to contemplate this. Think of different people, people you like, people you don't know. Forget about their rank, their socioeconomic class, their race or religion or whatever. And just think, you know, they want to be happy and not suffer. No different from me. And when you really do this, then you see that you can probably start up a conversation with anybody, and you can really empathize with everybody. And so it's on this basis that then we cultivate bodhicitta, wanting to liberate all others equally from cyclic existence, and therefore putting in the time and effort to become a fully awakened Buddha ourselves so we can do that. So that's our long-term motivation for listening to teachings this evening. Verse 82, and verse 82 gave us five different possibilities to check up on the relationship between the aggregates, the body and mind, and the person, the I. Okay, so in verse 82, read the verse and count the five. Okay, the aggregates are not the self, okay, nor do they exist in the self. Three, nor is the self in the aggregates. Four, but without them the self cannot exist. And five, the self and aggregates are not mixed like fire and fuel. So because none of those hold true, then the conclusion we draw is therefore how can an inherently existent self possibly exist? Okay, it says how can the self exist, but it means inherently existent self. Okay, so we talk about the first point last time, remember, that the aggregates are not the self, and all the problems that would arise if the aggregates were the self, you know, because if our body and mind were the person, yeah, then when the body or when the body ceased, then the person would cease. And if the person ceases, then there would be no continuity of the one who created the actions and the one who experienced the result. Yeah, because at death time, the person would just cease to exist, basta finito, and then a totally new, unrelated person would arise in the next life who wouldn't have anything to do with the previous life that created the actions. So, you know, the whole idea of karma and its effects, that our actions bring results, that would totally fall apart, you know. And also we wouldn't be able to remember anything from one life to the next. Actually, we wouldn't be able to remember anything from one moment to the next, because each moment that the person ceased and then the next moment a new person arose, that was totally different than, you know, we couldn't remember what happened to us in the previous moment. Okay.
As you get older, it seems to be.
Yeah. So we get older, we wonder, am I getting inherently existent? I can't remember what happened, what I just thought about. No, that's not the reason why. Okay. And also, if, you know, the person discontinued when the body discontinued and a new person arose in the next life, then if we say, well, that person still could experience the karma created by the previous life person, even though that previous life person was a totally different person, then we could say, then that person could experience the karma created by anybody, because they would all be equally, totally, you know, separate people. So we couldn't track any kind of continuity. Okay? So this is the disadvantage, you know, or the fault, if things existed inherently, is you couldn't track continuities, and you couldn't have causes creating effects. Yeah? Because inherently existent things exist by themselves, are uninfluenced by anything else. So they, no cause can make them arise, or if a cause makes them arise, then they keep arising again and again and again. Okay, so you have all kinds of problems like that if things had their own inherent, identifiable, findable essence. Then the second point that we analyze, okay, is the aggregates are not in the self, and the self is not in the aggregates. So in general, yeah, when we're not talking about inherent existence, the person and the aggregates have a relationship called basis and dependent, or support and supporter, supported. Okay, basis and dependent, or another way to translate it is support and supported. Okay, so the basis would be the aggregates, the dependent, the thing that depends on the aggregates would be the I. The support would be the aggregates, and what's supported, the supported, would be the person, the I. Okay. So if we just talk normal language, then things are like that, okay? However, they're not inherently basis and dependent, okay? So so when we say the aggregates are not in the I, okay, It means the aggregates don't depend on the person. Yeah, the person depends on the aggregates, because remember, the aggregates are the basis of designation. The person is what's designated. Okay, but if it were the other way around, that the aggregates were in the eye, that the aggregates depended on the eye, then that would, the analogy they give is like a bowl of yogurt. Okay, the bowl would be the person, and the yogurt would be the body and mind, all the psychophysical aggregates that you put in. Okay, and so in the analogy, the yogurt depends on the bowl, doesn't it? Yeah, otherwise you have a mess. So it's this feeling that we have sometimes, you know, the feeling that's imbued with grasping and inherent existence, where we feel like there's a real I, and then the aggregates just kind of come in and make up the I. Yeah, do you ever have that feeling? You know, like first there's me, and then, okay, yeah, there's a body, there's a mind, there's feelings, there's emotions, there's consciousness, there's these things, yeah. But it's not like that, yeah, because it's not like you have this solid concrete eye and then you just fill it up with the aggregates, yeah. Okay, so that would be like the aggregates being in the eye. So he says the aggregates are not in the eye. Then the other one is the eye is not in the aggregates, okay, meaning that the eye doesn't depend inherently on the aggregates. Okay, so the eye does depend on the aggregates, but not inherently. If it did, then it would be, the relationship like them would be like a house with a person inside, or a forest with a lion roaming around in it. Okay? So first you have the forest, like the aggregates, and then there's a lion roaming around in it. There's a person there. Okay? Or first you have a house, and then you have the person, who's a separate, completely separate entity that lives in it. Okay? But again, and sometimes we feel like that, you know? We feel like, oh yeah, there's a body and mind, and then me! Living inside them, somewhere, yeah. But both of these, you know, are imbued with grasping and inherent existence, because both of them are seeing the I and the aggregates as inherently separate and unrelated. Okay, the aggregate, you know, the analogy of the bowl with the yogurt in it, the bowl and the yogurt are two separate things. Yeah, the house and the person, or the forest and the lion, two separate things. So while the first point we negated when we said the self isn't in the aggregates, that boiled down to the self is not inherently one and the same as the aggregates. And these two, the aggregates are not in the self and the self is not in the aggregates, this boils down to the self and the aggregates are not inherently unrelated. Okay, sound familiar? Yeah, because we've gone through this before, you know. Are they inherently one and identical? Are they inherently different and cut off? Okay, so while two things that are different conventionally don't have to be totally unrelated, yeah, things that are inherently different must be totally unrelated and cut off with no relationship to each other. Okay, when we talk about conventional existence, everything just kind of flows, you know. Things are not so rigid. Inherent existence, things are very rigid. It is like this, and, you know, They're either totally one and identical or they're totally separate. Yeah. And if they're different, they're totally unrelated. Okay? Whereas, you know, we can see two things that are different. The color green and the tablecloth are different, aren't they? The color green is a color, and the tablecloth is cloth, okay? But they're related here, you know, because the green is one nature with the green tablecloth. They aren't separate, yeah? Okay, similarly, cause and effect, they're different. The cause isn't the effect isn't the cause. But they are related. They're causally related. One causes the other. Okay, but with inherently existent things, things either have to be totally the one and the same in every respect, or totally unrelated. Yeah. Okay? So if the aggregates in the person were inherently different and unrelated, then the aggregates could not be the basis of designation of the person. Yeah? Because the basis of designation and the object designated are dependent on each other. They're related, aren't they? You can't make them two separate different things. They're different, but they're not inherently unrelated separate things. Okay? But if they were inherently different, they would be totally separate. Okay? Because, you know, if you look, the basis of designation and the designated object, they're basis and dependent. Okay? Which one's the basis? When you have the aggregates in the person, they're in the relationship of basis and dependent. So which one's the basis and which one's the dependent? The aggregates are the basis. The person is the dependent. When you have that between basis of designation and designated object, which is the basis and which is the dependent? This is, yeah, and the designated object is the dependent. What's dependent on it? Okay. Okay, so those were points 2 and 3. Then point 4, without the aggregates, the self cannot exist. Okay, so without having the aggregates, how are you going to identify a person? Without there being a body, feelings, discriminations, compositional factors, and primary consciousnesses, without there being those, how are you going to identify the presence of a person? You can't. Can you? Yeah. It's like, how can you identify a table without legs and a flat top? If you took away the legs and you took away the flat top, are you going to have a table? No. Okay. So, you know, when it in that line, without the aggregates, the self cannot exist. You know, that's what it means. Yeah. The person cannot exist on its own, independent of the aggregates. Okay. And so again, this is an example of the aggregates and the person being inherently different. Okay? Because if they were totally separate, yeah, okay. Without the aggregates, the self cannot exist. So it's an example of them if they were inherently different. Okay? Because if they were inherently different, you could start out with a person with 5 aggregates, take away each aggregate, and you would still have a person there. Okay? Now that actually is the idea behind a soul. Isn't it? Yeah? That you take away the body, yeah, feelings, discriminations, consciousness, everything, and you still have a soul remaining. Yeah? In Buddhism, it says, you take away all those things, there's nothing remaining. Yeah? There's no self that is separate from the aggregate. Another disadvantage that happens if the self and the aggregate were inherently different is the aggregates could be over there and the person could be here. They wouldn't have to be in the same place because they were totally different things. Yeah? So the broom is over there and the dirt is over here, you know. But is it like that with the body and the person? Or the aggregates and the person, that the person's over there and the aggregates are over here? No, that can't be. Okay? So without the aggregates, the self cannot exist. Then the fifth one is the self is not mixed with the aggregates like fire and fuel. Okay? So this is... like we talked before, some people believe that the aggregates and the person have some kind of inexpressible relationship that's neither one nor different. Yeah, that they're mixed in some kind of ineffable, inexpressible way. Okay? So they give the example. Like wood and the fire that's burning it. Okay? So when the wood is burning, the fire is inseparable from it. Okay? And in fact, the fuel becomes the fire. But beforehand, they were separate. But afterwards, they become the same thing. You know? So that's the example, you know? But in fact, yeah, however, the self and the aggregates aren't mixed in that way, and one does not become the other. Okay, so that option is not acceptable. Because in an inherently existent world, things must be either completely identical or totally unrelated. Okay, so those were the five points in the verse. In Nagarjuna's treatise on the Middle Way, his seminal work on emptiness and dependent arising, in place of the fifth point, he had a different fifth point. Instead of, you know, them being inexpressibly related like fuel and fire, it is the person does not... inherently possess the aggregates. Okay, so this is the one you hear more commonly. Okay, so generally speaking, the person does possess the aggregates. We say my body, my mind, my feelings. Yeah, so there's the idea that there's a self that possesses the aggregates. But there isn't an inherent relationship between them, and there's not an inherently existent me possessing inherently existent emotions. Yeah. And this is where we get trapped, you know, in our daily life when we get really emotional about things. It's like, there's a real me here, you know, and whatever I feel is real, you know. And somebody wasn't paying attention to me. They were diminishing what I was saying. I feel so angry, or I feel unheard, I feel denigrated, you know? And so we feel like there's a big, strong, inherently existent I, and these big, strong, inherently existent feelings. Yeah? Okay? But if the person and the feelings, you know, were existed like that as two inherently different things, yeah, then how can the person possess the feelings? because inherently existent things are unrelated to everything else. Okay. So usually, you know, when we talk about possession, there's two ways people can possess things. Either the way, you know, a person owns a house, where they are two separate things, or the way we possess our ear or our head, where they're one nature, you know, and they can't be separated. But, you know, in terms of inherent existence, you can't have, you know, actually, it is the second way, you know, we possess our feelings like we possess an ear, or we possess our body that way. But if the things were inherently existent, that kind of possession wouldn't be possible. Okay? They would have to be totally independent and separate. Okay? So it's quite interesting, you know. Next time you get in some kind of emotional bout, yeah? I can't stand this! I mean, you know what that's like, right? You know, you're fed up, you're angry, you're hurt, you're everything. You just want, okay? Then sit there and say, who's angry? Yeah? Who owns this feeling of anger? Yeah? What is this person that is the possessor of the anger? And try and, or hurt feelings, or betrayal of trust, or whatever it is, you know? Try, just sit with it, and like, okay, who's this person that owns this? Yeah? Or I feel, you know, whatever it is. Who's the person who's feeling that? Find that person. And then, you know, try and find the feeling. I feel angry. And then say, well, how do I know that I feel angry? What is the feeling of anger? Yeah, when you sit there in your own experience, what is the feeling of anger? On what basis do you say I'm angry? It gets really interesting when you start to investigate like this. Really interesting. Because when we don't investigate, boy, you know, I'm really ticked off. And then you start investigating who is ticked off. What is the meaning of ticked off? You know? What basis do I say that? It is really quite interesting. Try it. Yeah? So instead of, you know, dumping on the other person, sit there and try and find yourself first. Yeah? So if we can't find a person who's related to the aggregates in any of those five ways, inherently, you know, who has an inherent relationship with those aggregates in any of those five ways, then we can't have there's no inherently existent person. Yeah. It's like if there's, you know, if you have, it's only possible to have five colors of tables, you know. Red, white, blue, yellow, and green. It's not red, it's not white, it's not blue, it's not yellow, it's not green. You don't have a table any of those five colors, and those are the only five colors that you have a choice between. Then you don't have a table, do you? Okay, so similar kind of thing. In Chandrakirti's supplement, okay, in Chandrakirti's supplement, to Nagarjuna's treatise on the middle way, he adds two more points. Okay, so the sixth, we'll make 7 points. So the sixth point is the self is not the collection of the aggregates. And the seventh is the self is not the arrangement of the aggregates. Okay? So these two are harder, you know? Yeah? Oh, the self is the collection of the aggregates. Yeah, you just put the aggregates together. And then, magic, there's a self that appears. There's a person that appears. Yeah? But does that mean that the person is the collection of the aggregates? Because remember, the collection is a collection of aggregates, and none of the aggregates are the person. So the collection of the aggregates, a collection of non-persons can't be a person. Okay, so the self is not the collection of the aggregates, yeah? None of the aggregates are the self, so a collection of non-persons can't be a person. Then we say, well, the self is the arrangement of the aggregates. Yeah? So that, again, is a collection, but a collection arranged in a certain fashion. But, again, it's the same problem, is that each part of the collection is not the person. So the whole thing together can't be the person. And when we're talking about inherent existence. Yeah, when we're not talking about inherent existence, yeah, you put all the car parts together in a certain order. Is that a car?
Yeah.
Well, it could be.
You said the origin
carefully existed. Yeah. But even conventionally existent. Okay, is the car the arrangement of the car part? Why not?
You still have to have a person there to designate it as a car.
Yeah, because the car is designated independence on the car parts. Okay, so being designated independence on something is not the same as being that thing. Although in our common language, we say, you know, like I say, I'm Chodron. When you look at that through ultimate analysis, it makes absolutely no sense. I'm Chodron. What is Chodron? Yeah? This hand, this nose, the voice. I mean, you can't, none of it. So saying, I'm Chodron, in the light of ultimate analysis, you can't say that. But when you don't analyze with ultimate analysis, and we're just using words to help us on a conventional level, then we say, I'm Chodron. It would actually be more accurate on the conventional level to say, I am called Chodron. The designation, and somebody giving me that name. Because it's not like you have that basis of designation and the name automatically appears from it. Yeah, any name could have appeared through that, from the collection of body and mind. Yeah. But Ling Rinpoche gave that name, gave that designation. Okay. So together with those, the first five, but using the one about possessions for the fifth, then adding the self is not the collection of the aggregates and the self is not the arrangements of the aggregates, that makes the very familiar set of 7 points that from Chandrakirti that we analyze. Yeah? That's the fifth one. That's an alternative fifth one. It's an alternative. In this text for the fifth one, he said the self and the aggregates don't have this inexpressible relationship. like fire and fuel, but in Treatise on the Middle Way, he said that the self does not possess the aggregates. Okay?
Which text came first?
No. I don't.
I don't know historically.
Yeah, I don't know historically either. Somehow I feel like Treatise on the Middle Way would come first. Yeah, but I could be mistaken. Okay, then, when we're analyzing to look, to see, if something is inherently existent, that reasoning that we just used, the 5 points or the 7 points, it boils down to either the self and the aggregates being one or them being different. So that's the reasoning of one and many, one or many, one or different. Okay, that's one reasoning we can use. Another reasoning that is often used is called the diamond splinters, and this one analyzes the cause. And this is the one, Nagarjuna's famous first verse in the treatise, that at no time anywhere is something produced but from itself, from other, from both, and neither, or causelessly. Okay. And then a third major reasoning that's used is the reasoning refuting production from existent and non-existent, which analyzes the effect. A fourth one is called the reasoning refuting production from the four extremes, which analyzes both the cause and effect. And the fifth one is dependent arising, which is the monarch of reasonings. So if you look in Meditation on Emptiness, Jeffrey has all of these. I'll give you page numbers to look. Page 131 to 193, he talks about all of these. Pardon?
So does inside.
Ah. Okay, then verse 83. The other three elements are not earth, nor are they in earth, nor is the earth in them. But without them, the earth element cannot exist. Such is also the case for each of the other elements. Therefore, as with the self, the elements are unreal. Here, unreal means not truly existent. Okay? So in the previous section, Nagarjuna examined the person and instructed us how to meditate on the selflessness of persons. Here, he's focusing on the selflessness of phenomena, which are, in this verse, the five elements. And these five elements, they're five of the six constituents. Remember when we had the verse looking for the person? Yeah. So here in verse 83, he's using the same kind of reasoning and the same kind of analysis to see if, the elements, if one element is the other three, if it's in the other three, if it possesses them, if it can exist without them, and so on. Okay. So the five, So here he's starting off with form, because in the previous verse we did the self, and now he's, he wants to analyze the aggregates to see if they're truly existent. The self is, the form aggregate in the list of the five aggregates is the first one. So he's starting off with that. And the form aggregate has this wonderful definition, whatever is suitable to be form, which means absolutely nothing, except just relying on, our conventional sense, but who knows what that is. Okay, but so when we could talk about form, we can talk about gross or subtle form, And gross form is that which is composed of a group of the 8 atomic substances. Okay, so the 8 atomic substances, earth, fire, water, and wind, and then the 4 elemental derivatives, visual form, sound, smell, taste, and tangibles. That makes 9, doesn't it? I think they omit sound from that. Yeah. So visible, form, smell, taste, and tangibles. Okay. So atom, calling them atoms of, earth and so on, isn't a perfect translation, but it's easier than saying tiniest particle all the time. Okay. So here, we start examining the 4 elements, earth, water, fire, and air, which are the basis of the form aggregate to see if they exist inherently. Then we do the same thing with the derivatives, visible form, smell, taste, and tangibles. Okay? And if we can't find any of them by analyzing in this same way, then using ultimate analysis, then we say that they too are not truly existent. Okay, so the 4 elements are parts of a collection, and the collection is the basis of designation of a larger material object. Yeah, so these elements don't inherently exist, and the reason given to prove this is that they exist in relationship to and reliant on others. So something that is in relationship, that is reliant or dependent, can't inherently exist. Okay. So the elements have the relationship of being mutually reliant on each other in the same way that the person as the designated object and the aggregates as the basis of designation are also mutually reliant. Okay, so here we're looking at before we said the aggregates were the basis and the person was the dependent. Here, if we look at the person as the designated object and the aggregates as the basis of designation, then they become mutually dependent because the designated object and the basis of designation exist mutually dependent in relationship to each other. Okay, so the mode of analyzing is the same to see if they are inherently identical or inherently separate. Okay, so let's start off. In that verse it says, so the other 3 elements are not earth, that's number 1, nor are they in earth, that's number 2, nor is the earth in them, that's number 3, but without them the earth element cannot exist, that's number 4. Okay, there's no 5th one on this. Okay, so the first one, the other 3 elements are not earth. Okay, so air, water, and fire are not inherently one and the same with the earth element. Okay, if they were one and the same, then water would be earth and fire would be air, and they would lose all their own individual characteristics. So conventionally, the 4 elements existing within the form aggregate are mutually the basis of each other. Okay? So the earth element, for example, has all the other elements complete with it, but it is not inherently one with them. It possesses the other three elements, but not inherently. Unfortunately, I don't understand this ancient Indian system of how they posit the elements very well, so I can't really unpack this for you. Yeah, but it seems like each element has the other elements within it, but it's not inherently one and the same with those other elements. Okay, it possesses the other three elements, yeah, but not inherently. Then number two and three is, nor are they in earth, nor are the other elements in earth, nor is the earth in them. Okay, so the other three elements are not inherently dependent on earth, and earth is not inherently dependent on them. Okay, but if they were inherently different, that would have to be the case. Okay, so it seems like, well, let's go on, and I think we can deduce a little bit about how they see these elements. Yeah. But without them, the earth element cannot exist. So the earth element cannot stand alone on its own without the other three elements. They exist in mutual dependence upon each other. So if you look at it, you know, you have these four elements, all of which represent different properties. Yeah, the earth is hardness, water is cohesiveness, fire is heat, and wind is motility or mobility, okay? So you can't have like hardness you can't have mobility without something that moves. You can't have cohesiveness without two things that are gonna be put together. You can't have fire without something that is hot. You can't have hardness, yeah, without the other ones either, okay? So I think it's in this way that all these qualities, you know, or all these elements, whether you see them as attributes or you see them as atomic particles, they all, in one way or another, have to, they all go along with each other in gross form. Yeah, so that if you don't have one, you don't have the others either. Yeah, I mean, what would be, there's probably something in physics, you know, like if you don't have this particle, then you can't have that particle. There's probably something like that, but I don't know enough physics to tell you what it is. Yeah. Okay. But the point is that the other three elements aren't inherently based on or dependent on the fourth element, whatever the fourth element wants to be. And that fourth element also can't exist without the other three elements. Okay, so that's their relationship, and so therefore they're mutually dependent. They can't be inherently existent. Okay, when a geshe comes who understands the ancient Indian system of physics, maybe you can ask them to explain this to you. Okay, but I can't say I understand it well. Okay. But you know, if you use our system, you know, if you use our system. Yeah, I mean, you can see that we have the elemental chart with, I don't know how many elements on it now, 100 and something. Yeah, but aren't all those elements in some way, I mean, mutually dependent on each other? That you would, you know, you're able to discern one element because of how it relates to other elements? Yeah, it's not like they're individual, unrelated things, But these, you know, the basic elements in the periodic chart are always, you know, relating to each other, forming new things, and just to identify them, yeah? I mean, part of the way we identify them is based on how they relate to the other elements. Okay? So it must be something like that. Okay? Then, 84 and 85 go together. Earth, water, fire, and wind are each not inherently existent. Since each one does not exist without the other three do not exist without each one. So again, you know, how those properties of hardness, cohesiveness, heat, and mobility relate to each other. Yeah. And when you really think of them, I mean, you can't have any of those characteristics independent of the other ones. And 85, if each one does not exist without the other three, and the other three do not exist without each one, then individually they do not essentially exist. So how could they arise as a compound, like an inherently existing compound? Okay, so these verses are about mutual reliance precludes inherent existence. Okay. So individually, earth, water, fire, and wind are not inherently existent since each one does not exist without the other three. Okay, they're mutually reliant, mutually dependent. Okay, if we remove three of the four elements, the fourth one's no longer there. Now that would be an interesting thing. If you took away all the elements in the periodic chart, could you have one element left?
No, you just said you took away all of the elements.
Except one. Yeah. I mean, could you posit one element without positing more than one element? Because things are composed of many elements, aren't they? Yeah, but being in a true form, that's different than existing without the others even existing at all.
I don't know about the elements separately, but I think if you look within each one and look subatomically, it's easier to make this thing work. How can you have protons without neutrons and electrons?
Yeah.
You know, they all kind of have to be there to make it
work. Oh, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. Yeah, so what you're saying is they're all composed of the same subatomic particles
in different configurations.
No, subatomic particles.
They're atoms.
The elements are atoms.
Those are atoms of sodium, atoms of this.
No, they're molecules.
No, they're atoms.
They're atoms.
They're not molecules. That's a periodic table of atomic.
Of atoms. They combine, two atoms combine to form a molecule.
But right, you can't have different parts of an atom without having other parts. You can't have protons without
electrons.
Right, you couldn't identify protons without there being electrons, without there being neutrons. You couldn't identify one subatomic particle without there being other ones.
Mm-hmm. I think they're always in the, I don't think you have them appearing or existing without being in relation to the others.
Yeah. I mean, the point is nothing can exist independent of other things. Yeah. Okay. So, for example, in the collection of elements, if the fire element were missing, the other three elements would also not be present. So if you had an atom and the protons were missing, could you have the other subatomic particles without protons? Yeah, might be rather strange. I don't know enough physics to say. I'm sure anybody know? I'm sure somebody will write us in, is listening, and, you know, and explain it to us. Okay, so the point is, being dependent and reliant in this way, the four elements cannot exist by themselves. Even conventionally, they have to exist as a group. Okay, so all four elements exist within the collection of elements and derivatives that make up a given material object. Yeah. So in this composite, the components rely on each other. Now that's for sure. Even in our system of science, that any object is made up of multiple different kinds of molecules, and all those molecules depend on each other, and all the atoms depend on each other, because they, you know, with the electric charges and everything, they're influencing what each other are doing all the time. Okay, so. So it comes back to the same point, that anything that arises dependently cannot exist independently. And since independent existence and inherent existence are synonymous, anything that is dependent can't inherently exist. Okay? Where are we? Should we do one more verse? Yeah, so 86, if each element existed on its own, why wouldn't fire occur without fuel? Okay, so here we're getting another, you know, why are they dependent on each other? Can you have fire without something that burns?
No.
Yeah, so can, you know, the something that burns is made up of the other elements. So you can't discern fire, which is burning, without there being other elements involved. Okay? So here, somebody says, each of the four elements exists inherently, and when they come together, they form an inherently existing composite. That's entirely different. Yeah. So this can't be. Since each element does not inherently exist, a form that is a composite of them cannot inherently exist. Okay? So again, in the context of inherent existence, two or more things cannot rely on each other. They must be totally unrelated, separate, independent. Yeah? If each element existed inherently, there could be fire without firewood, because fire would be completely different and not reliant in any way upon the other three elements. Okay. In that case, fire would not need to depend on fuel. So the same way, you know, if you had, air as mobility, could you have the air or the wind element alone and discern mobility without there being any other, elements that moved? Or could you discern the water element that makes things stick together without having, other objects that are made of the other elements that stuck together? Okay? So I think it's in this way that they're saying, you know, to discern one element, you have to have all the elements there. I'm trying to think of, like, what would be an example?
I think of the body, kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to have all of those elements for the body to function.
Mm-hmm.
So if you took one away, that wouldn't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could take a hand away and the body would still be there.
No, about the parts. I was thinking about the hardness. So you took all the skeleton out.
Oh, the hardness, right, okay.
Work.
Yeah.
If you took the water,
the salt water. Yeah, if you took,
Okay, so if you took any
one element out,
Of our body,
it
wouldn't
work.
Then the body wouldn't work at all. Okay, so that's up to verse 86. And then we'll start on 87 next week. Okay, anything else? Sorry, I'm not a physics teacher for ancient Indian physics.
Can't you really, like, that she was mentioning that kind of apply that for, like, the death process when the elements disappear and then the body takes its new, the mind takes a new form?
So, well, yeah, and the death absorption, as each element loses its strength, that affects the other elements in the body.
Yeah.
And it affects what the person experiences, it affects the vision and everything. Yeah.
And then I was thinking about they had this, the Mars, for example, had water at one point, and they're looking if there was life form at that point too, when Mars had water. So another planet, you know, looking at their substances, what kind of elements are there right now, and what is missing to have life forms there. So,
Yeah.
You couldn't have ice if you took away its coldness.
True.
And it's kind of like you can't have these things if you took without the characteristics, because it's...
Right, yeah. Yeah. All these characteristics are dependent on each other. Yeah, so even though ice is the water element, it's true without the absence of the heat element, you couldn't have ice. Yeah. Depends on heat element being very small. Okay. That's it. Then we'll go on with 87. This whole first chapter, it was about highest good. Higher rebirth and highest good. So the first, 30-something chapters were about the higher rebirth, and then the rest were the highest good. We're almost done with this chapter. Yeah, then chapter 2, they have the same two themes, higher good and highest rebirth, except they alternate them. They go back and forth between them. But again, Nagarjuna is, emphasizing the same kind of things. And then after that, he goes on, to give the king some advice about royal policy and so on and so forth. It's really quite an interesting text, you know, how he weaves these complex, refutations of inherent existence with how you create the cause for the Buddha's 32 signs with how to treat prisoners, But one thing that comes very clear is, how are all these topics related? Well, if he's refuting inherent existence, the proof that the lack of inherent existence, that emptiness does not mean total non-existence to Nagarjuna, is that he also teaches how to create the causes and conditions for the Buddha's 32 signs. Yeah, and he also teaches how to abandon bad karma by, being excessively cruel to inmates, and how to create good karma by, helping them to become better people. So just the fact that he's teaching those subjects shows that he believes in causality. Yeah. And so clearly, if he's teaching about causality and he's teaching about emptiness, there's no way emptiness can mean non-existence. If it meant non-existence, if Nagarjuna was actually saying nothing existed, then he wouldn't teach about
how to create the causes for upper rebirth, or how to create the causes for a Buddha's body, or how to treat inmates, you know, how to select ministers, because none of those things would exist. Yeah, but the fact that he teaches causality shows that he believes in dependent existence. Yeah, and so his message was not at all that that things are totally non-existent. So I was just thinking maybe an analogy with our kind of science would be, what to have a gross object, you need many different kinds of atoms to come together. And for those atoms to exist, you need all the subatomic particles, because you don't have any atoms that are just electrons, or just protons, or just neutrons, or just whatever other particles they found. All those particles, you know, exist in relationship to each other. And you identify them in terms of how they relate to other particles. Okay.
May the spiritual teacher soothing me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase.
Yidam
Gurana Mandala Kamiryatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful tenting gets of generosity. May you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma,
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west floor.